people, either 1 billion people are hungry, 2 billion suffering from diseases related to bad food.
You have been listening to Dr. Vandana Shiva, scientist, feminist, and ecological activist, October 20th, 2014, in Berkeley, California. The second part will be released in a later program. The website for the Navdanya Institute is www.navdanya.org. Wings thanks radio station KPFA for use of its audio. For Wings, I'm Kelia Ramirez Watson in Berkeley, California.
Tune in next week for the rest of Vandana Shiva's powerful speech in California.
We'll have to be more brilliant than we've ever been, more resilient than we've ever been, more courageous than we've ever been.
To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org, and please like our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder,
board operator.
Please introduce yourself.
Happy to. My name is Dana Hiddle. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the interim director of the Office of Developmental Disability Services.
And are you the permanent director or just an
interim? Interim. So I am lucky enough to hold this position through the long session. And I have made the statement to leadership that if they need me to stay on longer while they hunt for a permanent director, I'm happy to do that.
Can you give us a basic overview of ODDS?
ODDS is what we colloquially call the Office of Developmental Disability Services. And we are part of the Oregon Department of Human Services. So we're a program within that broader umbrella. And we are one of six programs that operate within the Department of Human Services. And we help individuals with supports, individuals who are experiencing intellectual or developmental disabilities. So we help them with supports to live the lives that they want to live. And our program spans the whole lifespan. So your whole life, an individual's whole life, can be spent with us in ODDS, which is very cool. And we do a lot of partnership with other state agencies, local agencies, case management entities, provider organizations, and tribes, self-advocates, which is absolutely my favorite part of all of it. Families, nonprofits, to really make sure that we are doing a good job in supporting folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so that's kind of what we do.
If interacting with self-advocates is one of your favorite parts, you might want to memorize my face.
Oh, it's memorized, John. It is burned in there, into my brain.
I think we all kind of have a little question about what actual controls do you really have?
We serve about 37,000 people in ODDS now. So our program is always growing. And as the interim director, I'm basically responsible for overseeing the entire state DD system.
everybody keeps on saying, why in the world don't they just raise the wage for caregivers? Mm-hmm. And you get a certain amount of money mm-hmm. coming in. But is it true? You really cannot like just say, okay, I, Dana Hinnell, am just going to make a system change here, and I'm going to say caregivers get $25 an hour. You can't really just flip a switch and just do that.
I cannot. I wish I could. I wish there was all the money in the world to be able to do that. That would be awesome. But no, our budgets, the state budget is allocated by the state legislature. And so they give us the money to run our programs. And then the federal government gives us money that matches the money that the legislature gives us, and that creates our overall budget. So when we're making changes to rates and things like that, we have to go through a process, not only, you know, legislature approval, but also federal government approval, because the more we put in, the more they also have to put in. So they have to know that we're increasing rates and things like that so that they can appropriately budget for it as well. So it's a long process, and we do some negotiations with the federal government and, you know, wait for their approval. And then once they approve it, we go ahead and implement it.
Thank you for clarifying that.
You bet.
What are the current and potential future changes to ODD? Is facing?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about one of the challenges, and that's, you know, rates and budget, you know, the state budget that we have to keep doing our services. That's always a concern, making sure that we have enough money in our budget to keep services going and making sure people get what they need from us. You know, we've been dealing with provider shortages even before the pandemic, but COVID really caused more in terms of shortages across, you know, ODDS certified or licensed children and adult foster homes. We saw some decreases in the number of providers in that part of our system. We're hearing from folks that it's difficult to get people to provide in-home services. So in-home service workers are at a premium. So those are some of the biggest challenges, I think. And we need also to be better and work harder in letting people know about our services and what we offer, specifically people who live in, you know, more rural settings or need, you know, different types of services, have different cultures, and we need to be able to honor those cultural differences, and having providers that can do that. That's a big challenge. I think part of that too is making sure we're getting out and notifying all of our tribal partners about what we offer in the DD system and how they can get those services and access those services. So those are just a few of the things, you know, just kind of managing all of the things around the business and then assuring that people are still able to get and access what they need. And we have providers to do that.
Well, I would also say, like, you know, you said when you were answering the question here that it's a matter of advertising the services. I mean, it's not just you. It's any social service. It always seems like they always have some kind of program out there that could benefit you, and yet nobody tells you.
And I'm a big believer, John, because I've worked in many parts of the system, you know, across multiple agencies, and seeing what's available by other agencies and what we offer and how we can link those together to make it better and easier for the people that we serve, you know, whether it's a person experiencing intellectual or developmental disabilities who needs dental care, for example, or maybe they need mental health treatment or something like that. And how do we all work together to make sure all those needs are being met?
Oh, yeah. And I'm definitely one of those people who need all that.
Yeah. Well, we need to make sure that that happens.
So can you let us know what Agency with Choice and how it will affect current services? I mean, yeah, can you? So what was it? It was 2024, Our 2023, we finally voted in agency with choice because they gutted and stuffed a bill. And even though the advocates stood against it, it still wound up going in because there was 9 other really great things with it. Yeah, anyways, it's going in, and I'm just kind of curious, when is it planning to come out? How will it change the system? And is there any chance that it will be removing one of, like, will it remove DSPs or PSWs out of the system?
That is absolutely not the intent. So first and foremost, that's not the intent. And you're right. I think actually you might be losing some time too, John, because I was thinking 22 or 24, 23 was actually passed in 2022. So 2 years ago. What Agency with Choice did was create a new type of agency that's sort of an in-between model of what we currently have in the in-home service system. So we have folks who love to hire and manage their own personal support workers or independent workers who aren't employed by an agency. And then currently we have agencies that employ direct support professionals. And that gets really confusing because they're in-home support workers. They come into an individual's home and help them with what they need. But based on essentially how they get paid is how they're different. And so the agencies now do all of the hiring and management of DSPs. And what Agency with Choice is intended to do is, like I said, be sort of an in-between model where individuals can hire their own support workers or in-home workers, but they have supports from an agency to do other the management pieces like payroll and accounting things, taxes, that type of thing. So it's really not intended to replace either of those models, but really to be a complement to both and give folks more choices about how they can manage their support workers who are coming into their home.
So does that mean Agency with Choice will be able to do things like DSA, where you get into a big group, you know, you got one caregiver and then you got lots of clients with that one caregiver and then go out and do things? Will they be able to do something like that?
You know, that I'm not sure about. We're still in the process of designing it and working through some of those things. That Agency with Choice isn't actually slated to be implemented until January 1st of 2026. So there's still a lot of details that we need to figure out with community, you know, the DD community and our partners. You know, definitely more to come on that, but overall intention is to create more choice.
Isn't it true that like Agency with Choice, like there'll only be 2 within the state, so there'll be 2 big ones? And then on top of that, if the employees decide they want to unionize, then the shop can't stop them from unionizing. Is that true?
That goes into a lot of policy analysis and a lot of conversations and advice that needs to still be done or get or gotten by the state. You know, you're basically alluding to a lot of the language that was in the bill, but yeah, there's a lot of policy and research that needs to be done still to finalize what Agency with Choice looks like. And there may even be additional bills that come forward in the next legislative session, you know, that add to it or change it. So we'll be watching it really closely, you know, just about, again, what it's supposed to be doing. It's really supposed to be for folks who really like the self-directed model that's part of the personal support worker model, but they don't want to take on the responsibility of being what we call a legal employer. And that gets back to what I was talking about with, you know, payroll and taxes and having to do those types of employer-related tasks.
And that stuff, I mean, when a client couldn't do that, that stuff was originally done by their case managers or the PAs if the client couldn't do it, right? Am I got that correct?
I believe I'll have to look into that. Can I get back to you on that part?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, because I think it's changed over the course of several years. I think it used to be, you know, back in the day when I was in ODDS the first time before I went to another agency, it was done by personal agents. The state has had a contractor. ODDS has had a contractor that's kind of handled those tasks and duties for folks. And this is sort of an expansion, I think, of that original model.
We've all got a lot of concerns when they start saying, oh, let's make changes. Changes are not necessarily always good. But anyways, let's hope this one is actually going to work out for the best.
Well, and, you know, I can tell you from my perspective and all of the people in the ODDS team that we absolutely want to make sure that any changes that are made are to the benefit of the people that we serve. Makes things better and easier and more accessible for people to live the lives they want.
That's something I've seemed to be noticing about you. You seem to have a really big heart for the clients in this field. And I mean, you know, I've got an opportunity to be in a few conferences with you. So I've seen you interact with clients and other people. You know, you seem to really care about what's going on with the clients. You know, I've seen you have a pretty, you're pretty empathetic towards people with intellectual disabilities. On to my next question here. For our listeners, could you please tell us what the ARPA grants stand for? Could you tell us a little bit about the ARPA grants that went up, maybe?
You bet. Happy to. And that's more of that alphabet soup we were talking about before. So the American Rescue Plan Act, that is what ARPA means. And it's essentially a very large pot of money that the federal government has given to states to help them basically shore up their home and community-based services programs after COVID. So, you know, granted, nobody, I think, thought that COVID was going to last 4 years. When they sent us home back in March of 2020, because this virus was coming, I think most of us thought we'd be back in the office in a week or two. We had no idea it was going to go on for 4 years, and that, you know, we would have the challenges and see the staffing and workforce shortages that we've seen, and just, you know, the huge impact to people. And so this was the federal government's way, really, of helping states sort of build back after the COVID pandemic and use this money in ways that we haven't really been able to use it before because of federal rules. So essentially what they said was you can use this money to help build back the workforce, to incentivize workers to come back, to strengthen training. You can use it just basically to make things better in the home and community-based program. So we were very fortunate and very grateful to receive money through the ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act. And we've used that money in various ways. A lot of the money went to you know, shoring up the workforce and providers and making sure that they had enough workers to help meet the needs of all the people we serve. So that was really great. We did supported employment curriculum at Treasure Valley Community College. And that was really for us to develop an introduction to supported employment curriculum with a goal of expanding competitive and integrated employment to individuals. So that was one we were very, very proud of. We also spent about $10 million for emergency response grants, which is very cool, you know, really to help folks be prepared in emergencies. You know, we've been experiencing lots of weird weather things, you know, with climate change, you know, seeing those wildfires and ice storms and things like that, really trying to get emergency preparedness and response shored up for folks.
Is that what gave us the emergency kits that went out from all brokerages to the client?
Yes.
Okay, so now I know what it is.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? It's cool.
Yeah. I love my kit. That's great.
Awesome. Oh, that's great to hear. I'm going to take that back to the team. But yeah, we used a good portion of money for that. So that's really neat. We've been doing service equity grants too, which basically is to help case management entities get out into broader communities, other communities that may not have historically known about our services, to try to reach people who might need services.
Some advertisement for ODDS.
Right. That's exactly right. We've also allocated $1 million to self-advocacy innovation projects.
Thank you very much for that one.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. And an example of that was that the ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act money that was granted, funded the Summit on Empowerment, Enrichment, and Diversity Conference that was held in September of 2024. And that had 110 participants. So, you know, it really, really cool things that we haven't historically been able to do with money from the federal government in our program. So,
well, I must admit, the original sum that we were told on the self-advocacy grants was $500,000, and then it was bumped up to like a full $1 million. And I've got to tell you, I was so happy to see that happen. It was stupendous because, like, so many of us were doing, like, I mean, they added things to the SEED conference, and I think they did something with the ARC, and, you know, we were able to. I mean, my own local self-advocate group was able to do massive great things. And then a lot of it went to like OSEC, and it's just like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
super cool.
You know, I was really happy about that.
That's awesome. I'm glad. Yeah. So, I mean, again, we've been able to do some really cool things with this money, and it's exciting. I can't wait to see, you know, how it impacts services and folks moving forward. So I think we'll see the impacts of it for quite some time. So it's cool.
You know, next year people are going to be saying, okay, last year we got these really great grants to do advocacy. Is there any chance, because, you know, people kind of get used to that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like wondering about in 2025, are you guys going to try and do like any of those grants again? With the ARPA grants, ARPA advocacy grants, it was so great to see all those conferences and to be able to go to them and experience them. And that was all due to the fact that y'all gave out that money. Is there any chance that like next year we would be able to see that, or are we just going to have to do some fundraising on our own?
Well, so the ARPA funding, unfortunately, is time limited, and the strings that came with the money from the federal government was that we had to have it all out of the state's hands by March 31st of 2025, and it is one-time funding. But all that to be said, we're always looking for ways to help, and I can't obviously commit to funding because I don't know what the budget is going to look like moving forward, but we've got to find ways to be able to continue that kind of work. I mean, the self-advocacy work, in my opinion, is the most important work, and we need to figure out ways that we can bring more self-advocates in to have a say and help us direct, you know, the way that the services work and the system works. I mean, this is for the people that we serve. It's not for us. So we need to really be listening to folks who are utilizing our services and listen to them when they tell us what they need and see how we can get there.
So it is my intention, or my hope, this year we're doing a little experimentation with Build a Movement, also known as BAM. We have gotten Chris Gorsuch, thank you, Chris Gorsuch, for to sign on our legislative concept, which is we want to expand the case, or not expand, excuse me, lower the caseloads for PAs and county case managers. I don't know what the end number will be, but I'm kind of hoping we can reduce it substantially enough to really give them some wiggle room and move around and get to know their clients rather than having caseloads as high as what I heard one caseload got up to like 100 or something like that. And that was with a county case manager. And I was just like, how in the world do you ever know your clients set that way?
Right.
So it is my hope that this will be a learning experience and that we will get some good knowledge from this and also figure out who might be a good ally for our next legislative concept. Now, and it wouldn't be proposed this year. We're just doing one, which is around lowering caseloads for county case management and PAs. But I really want to put forth a legislative concept of full-time outreach and advocacy coordinators for all brokerages and county case management. As UCP was kind enough, Sarah Nowak, the director of UCP brokerages, was kind enough to hire Glenna Hayes to be our full-time outreach and advocacy coordinator. And yes, we've just done a whole lot since Glenna's been there. And that's just because Glenna was there and one of the directors decided we're going to hire somebody to let the self-advocates have a voice.
That's awesome.
And it's my hope that hopefully next long session we will have, not this long session, but next long session we'll have another legislative concept that will get tons of those out there and make your job a whole lot easier and a whole lot more difficult, as you'll have dozens of voices in your ears.
That's quite all right. I think it's super exciting and awesome. So yeah, bring it on. Bring it on, John.
Okay. Well, I'll remember you said that.
Yep. And it's recorded.
Well, I'll just remember so like, you know, 10 years from now when I bump into you.
That's right.
Okay, I am just, wow, we've got so many advocates in my ears.
That would be awesome. That would be so awesome.
That's what I'm excited about when it comes to the future of DD services. What are you excited about in the future of DD services?
So I'm excited about what you're excited about, clearly. But some other things that I'm excited about, I touched on it a little bit earlier, was when I was talking about how do we bring our systems, you know, all of the services that we provide throughout the state together so that we can really better serve folks, you know, from the oral health, physical health, behavioral health space. So doing a lot of cross-collaboration, cross-program collaboration with our partners, not just in Department of Human Services, but also the Oregon Health Authority, trying to figure out ways that we can get people's needs met. So like John, when you were pointing to yourself about your, you know, dental, how can we get that addressed, you know, easily, and you don't have to go to 50 different doors to figure out who can help. So that's something that I'm really excited about and I think is really important, is pulling away a lot of the burden off the people who are using our supports, who need our supports, and making sure that they can access things easily.
Well, I also need help with that whole mental health issue area.
That too. That's a big one. That's a big one for a lot of people. And, you know, it has to be addressed. We have to do it. You know, it's so important. Mental health is so, I mean, it impacts everything. It impacts our physical health. It impacts our social environments. It impacts everything. It's very, very important. So, and really strengthening our relationship with our tribal partners, you know, in the 9 federally recognized tribes of Oregon, and really honoring our government-to-government relationship with them.
That's the end of Disability Justice.
Portland on 90.7 FM.
Turn your ballots in and turn your radio on for KBOO's live election night coverage on Tuesday, November 5th from 6 to 9 p.m. We'll discuss local, state, and national issues